Hey, this is Matt, and I want to say thank you so much for tuning into the Reconstructing Faith podcast. Look, I think deconstructing, meaning taking apart, digging into our faith is important, but we've got to do it in a way that creates conversation, not condemnation, and we must do it for the purpose of reconstructing our faith in the way that Jesus called us to live. Thanks for joining me, and I hope this episode is a blessing to you, and I hope you think it's worth sharing. What's up? Good morning. Good morning. Good morning. Hello, Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitch, and YouTube. Thank you so much for tuning in to Bible Study Live with me. And share a little Depeche Mode through the stream this morning. So good. Policy of Truth. Oh, this morning we're going to dig into something. We're going to dig into something fun. And I'll tell you what. It's going to ruffle some feathers. You know whose feathers are going to mostly ruffle? Probably my conservative friends. It's going to probably tick off a few of them. It's probably going to annoy a few of my friends that are Christians. But we're going to get in the dirty and the mud this morning. Oh, yeah. Get it, Depeche Mode. It's such a good song. Hopefully it doesn't prevent stuff because of copyright, but I don't really care because we're digging into something important today, and Depeche Mode seems appropriate. So here we are. Do it in the policy of truth. All right. All right, all right, all right, all right. We're going to dig in here to something important. And what we're going to dig into is, how to be like Jesus. Okay, here's the deal. This is gonna ruffle some feathers, gonna take some people off, but we're gonna dig it. We live in a world that is, it's gone a little bit crazy. And what do I mean by that? I mean, look, we are all, and I don't care what side of the aisle people are on, everybody is trying to figure out what's true anymore, right? Like, we don't know who's lying to us these days. Between politicians, news media, the big tech, you know, censorship. It is hard to figure out who is telling the truth, who is lying to us, and we want to figure it out. And knowing the truth is important. Trying to figure out the truth is very important. That being said, how are we supposed to, like, let's say we find out the truth about stuff. Let's say we find out our government is full of big fat liars. Let's say we do. Let's say we find out the whole time our government, the big pharma, big tech, let's say we find out all of them have been lying to us. How are we supposed to handle it? You know, it's interesting. People think a lot of times this 2,000-year-old book, there's no way it could have stuff that applies to us in 2022. But I want to share with you that there's actually some knowledge in there about how to handle people when you find out. They've been feeding you nothing but lies and mistreating you. As a matter of fact, let's get real for a second. In the time that Jesus walked the earth, the Roman government was in control. Now, Rome was known for its brutality. I mean, even when we read about the crucifixion, there are two thieves next to Jesus. Thief, thieves, right? A thief. There, at least one of them is a thief. There's a thief next to him being crucified in public. Understand the gravity of that death penalty. It wasn't just like, okay, you get death by a firing squad, which would suck. But for crucifixion, you're nailed through your hands and feet. But you realize what kills you is suffocating, right? Like there's a spot in the Bible where they say, hey, we don't want them left up during the Passover, the religious leaders. So they go to Pontius Pilate, they go to the Roman leader and say, hey, break their legs so that they'll die quicker. Why would they break their legs? Because see, they're up there. Not only are they in pain because they get spikes through them, right? And they're publicly humiliated as they're naked or next to it, hanging on a cross. But they're like, they're pushing up, right? Like they're holding themselves up through these ripped parts of their body to get air in their lungs, because to release is going to make them suffocate to death. It is a brutal, destructive way to die. That's the government that was in control when Jesus walked the earth. Yet I find it interesting that, I mean, there were a lot of Hebrew people alive, yet Jesus didn't encourage crowds, mobs rioting, fighting the government. Now, listen, I'm going to be clear here. We don't get to see in the scriptures Jesus talking about how bad it is what Rome is doing. And we don't know if he did or didn't ever have conversations about that. So rather than look at what we don't know, let's look at what we do know for sure. We do know that there was an oppressive government that took everything by violence and force. Okay, they mandated how people were to live. They wouldn't allow them to gather in crowds. It was a bad deal. Now, a lot of people compare stuff going on today, right? There are mandates, there's this, there's that. It all sucks. Okay, let's just say it's the same. Let's just say it's similar. What are you supposed to do about it? Well, let's look at what Jesus did about it. So there were a couple people back in those days, a couple groups of people that really didn't care for him. One was Rome, right? Here's this rogue street preacher in their mind who's causing a stir. So the Roman government didn't care for Jesus. I think they didn't really, at least from what we read in the scripture, we didn't see them putting a whole lot of thought and effort into him. But what we do know is that they did not like uprisings, upheavals, things that would cause stress and chaos on Rome. So we know the Roman government didn't really care for Jesus. But what we also know were that the religious leaders hated him, right? I mean, that's who ultimately went to Pilate and asked to get him murdered. Oh, I think you'll like this, Cullen, actually. I think you'll like where I'm going with this. So what we also know is the religious leaders, the religious folks, the churchy folks, the ones that were supposed to be walking the closest with God, they're the ones that actually had him killed. They're the ones that went to the government to get him killed. So let's look at how Jesus said to handle these situations. And like I said at the beginning of this, I'm probably gonna piss off a few of my friends who are conservative and a few of my friends who are Christian, but that's okay, because I think what the most important thing for us to do is look and say, if we want to be like Christ, how do we live like Christ? And look, sometimes it's gonna make people uncomfortable. Sometimes it's gonna make my friends who are Christ followers uncomfortable. Sometimes it's gonna make my friends who aren't Christ followers uncomfortable. But at the end of the day, it's not about our comfort. What we want to try and figure out, if we're truly seeking after Christ, is how can I live like him? How can I live like he did? So let's take a look and let's see how he lived. Let's look at how Jesus lived and how he dealt with some situations. So first, let's look at how he actually dealt with something going on with a Roman soldier. What? A Roman soldier? Wait, isn't this the same people who nailed him to a cross and oppressed him? Why, yes. Yes, it is. And let's look at what he did. Matthew chapter 8. And I'm going to read from the message because I like it. Actually, you know what? No, I'm going to read from the New English Translation today. That's a fun one. And they do a lot of side notes on translation. So let's read through this. After he came down from the mountain, large crowds followed him. And a leper approached and bowed before him, saying, Lord, if you're willing, you can make me clean. He stretched out his hand and touched him, saying, I am willing. Be clean. Immediately the leprosy was healed. Then Jesus said to him, see that you don't speak to anyone, but go show yourself to the priest and bring the offering that Moses commanded as testimony to them. First thing I want to point out here is that someone who believed in Jesus and worshiped Jesus, what happened? What did he do? How did Jesus handle it? Oh, the person that believed in him, worshiped him, right? Lord, if you're willing, he healed him. There's a bigger thing in here, and I just want to point this out to you, okay? Because this is a thing where a lot of times I'll see people talk about this piece of scripture and say, look, because this person bowed at the feet of Jesus, they recognized who he was, Jesus healed them. Well, those are all true. But notice the guy said, if you're willing. What that meant was, there were a couple things that we could read from this. One, he wasn't sure the guy was willing to heal him. He wasn't sure that he was willing. But two, he was trusting that whatever decision was made by Jesus would be the right decision. Those are big deals. But I point this guy's healing out to you for this reason. It's not uncommon that we see that those who are following Christ in the Bible, those who come to him humbly, receive restoration. But these all seem to, are oftentimes, the examples we see are those who are, we'll say walking with God, right? Those who are, believe in God, believe in who he is, believe in what he can do. Those who would seem to be aligned with the purposes of Jesus, right? So that's easy to get. Like, of course, I mean, he's going to take care of his own, right? Well, I mean, we talk about that today, right? Man, you stand with those people who stand with you. You got to be loyal to those people who are loyal to you. But the story's not over. So let us continue reading this story. What happens next? When he entered Capernaum, a centurion came to him, asking for help. Now, I shared at the very beginning what Rome did to people. Remember, a thief got crucified, right? Suffocated to death. Brutal death for stealing, right? And come on, today it's like, it's less than $1,000. Don't chase them. So Rome was brutal. Yet here comes a centurion. Centurion is a soldier, okay? When he entered Capernaum, a centurion came to him asking for help. Now, whether you are on the left or the right of the political aisle, this would be like the person, like whoever you dislike the most on the other side of your stupid politics, no matter which side you're on, politics are stupid. I mean, they cause division and fights. It's just real, okay? And we all have our own beliefs, and I get it, and I respect them. I respect yours if they're different than mine. I do. We got to remember that we can disagree and still love each other as humans. And this is a beautiful example of that. Because here is someone, we'll say, for all intents and purposes, on the other side of the political aisle from Jesus. An extremely brutal side, because the same group of people who will later crucify him, right? And this centurion comes to Jesus asking for help. Verse 6, Lord, my servant is lying at home paralyzed in terrible anguish. Pause. His servant. Now, when people read this a lot of times, it's like, oh, God endorses slavery because he healed a servant. No. What a lot of us don't know, because a lot of us are too lazy to study history, is that back in the time of Rome, while, yes, there were people from other countries sold as slaves, and it was horrible and it was brutal. Yes, that kind of stuff did happen too. You saw Gladiator, you saw people sold people as slaves just to be killed and fed to tigers. It was disgusting. But there was also indentured servitude, where someone, if they owed a debt, would say, or if someone wanted to borrow money to provide for their family, a man might go to a wealthy Roman or a wealthy person and say, hey, I want to borrow whatever, X amount of, denarii to pay for my family's, debt or whatever, to pay off this land or to do whatever. And they would then say, and in exchange, I will become your servant for the next 5 years, 10 years, however long time it was. So when you read this, please don't get hung up on the word servant. Like, oh, Jesus healed a slave, so the person could stay a slave to the Roman. The fact that a Roman would come to a Jew to ask for anything was a big deal, because the Romans were extremely racist toward the Jewish people, and the Jewish people were extremely racist to everyone who wasn't Jewish. So, I mean, that was already an issue. So a lot of cultural, political barriers are being crossed just by this conversation taking place how it did. Literally, the Jewish people would refer to Gentiles, non-Jews, as dogs. And the Romans would refer to the Jewish people as dogs. Like, there was horrible racism. So I share that with you, because we got to understand this whole interaction that's taking place. If you picture it in 2022, it's like somebody from one political side of the aisle that's an extremist going to someone who's another political side of the aisle, extremist, and going, I need your help. That's crazy. Okay? So here we go. Jesus said to him, verse 7, I will come and heal him. But the centurion replied, Lord, I'm not worthy to have you come under my roof. Instead, just say the word, and my servant will be healed. For I too am a man under authority, with soldiers under me. I say to this one, go, and he goes. And to another, come, and he comes. And to my slave, do this, and he does it. When Jesus heard this, he was amazed and said to those who followed him, I tell you the truth, I haven't found such faith in anyone in Israel. I tell you, many will come from the east and west to share the banquet with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in the kingdom of heaven. But the sons of the kingdom will be thrown out into outer darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Then Jesus said to the centurion, go, just as you believed, it will be done for you. And the servant was healed in that hour. Now, later on, we read that, the guy, when he gets home, he asks, they were like, hey, no need to rush. He's better. He's up. And he was like, when he asked, he was like, well, when did that happen? And they told him it was like at the exact time Jesus said. Now, this story, the purpose of it is not to talk about the miracle of what Jesus could do, because that's a big deal. But the purpose of why I'm reading this section to you right now is because here is a man who, for all intents and purposes, he's part of the group that will physically kill Jesus. He is part of a group of people that has been oppressing Jesus' people for a great amount of time right now. Part of a group that beats them in the streets, abuses them. Think of it as if you are of the belief that police are evil and brutal and bad, I don't align with that. There are some who are, but I don't think all are. But if you believe that, consider it like this. Rome is like taking the worst of the worst police, okay? Rome would be like the worst of the worst in law enforcement, the ones who aren't really cops. They're just power-hungry bullies that grew up and got a badge. That's who Rome was. And they were beating the group of people who's impoverished, less fortunate. They're overtaxing them. They're taking their money. They're oppressing them and keeping them in poverty. That's who just came to Jesus and said, I need your help. And Jesus, in part of the oppressed group, said, okay. Not only did he do that, Jesus looked at his own people and said, I haven't seen faith like this out of any of you. And when you guys get to the day where you're like, yeah, okay, we're Abraham's people. Now we need to dine the banquet. Guess who's not going to come eat with me? You're going to be hanging out outside in the less cool spot. And folks like this guy, we're going to be dining together. The message wasn't Rome is better than you, wealthy is better. The message was the people that you've decided aren't good enough, the people that you've decided, the people that are wronging you and that are your enemies that just don't get it, guess what? There's a moment where they will get it. And when they do get it, they're gonna get that love that you think you're just entitled to. Jesus was showing that even though people are different, even though people do wrong stuff, love is supposed to trump that. Now, it doesn't mean that truth wasn't pointed out. It doesn't mean we don't know because we don't need to read the conversations. I'm not telling you to pretend things that suck don't suck. If you are oppressed and you have been abused and you've been beaten down by a group of people, by a specific person, I am not saying pretend they're nice. I'm not saying go, oh, they're so good. I've never seen people as good as them in the world. This guy actually had a change of heart. Like, the guy that came to Jesus humbled himself before him. But what I am saying to you is this. There's a reason in the scripture Jesus says to love our enemies. And the reason is because God loved his. I talked about this yesterday. While we were his enemies, God chose to love us. Here's a Roman. For all intents and purposes, Jesus' enemy. The Jewish people's enemy. Yet Jesus showed love and healed the person who was his indentured servant. Jesus healed that person. He restored that person. Now, some could say, well, he wasn't doing it for the Roman. He was doing it for the servant at home. Okay, let's run with that he was helping that servant. It doesn't say that servant was Jewish. That servant could have also been a Roman who sold himself into indentured servitude. They could have been Jewish. We don't know that. But even if Jesus did it for the sake of the servant, guess what? He literally just gave the Roman kudos for having the faith to believe he could do it. So my point being, Jesus crossed barriers to bring love into a place where there wasn't love. Now, why would he do that? See, because here's the deal. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. talked about this, right? You can't, which coincidentally he got from the scriptures, but you can't overcome evil with evil. You can't fight empire with empire tactics. If we want to fix a broken world that is full of violence, hatred, racism, mistreatment, disgusting behavior, hurt, if we want to bring healing, you can't heal with a sword. You can't heal by hurting. We can't. Now, for just to clear the air for anybody who starts getting a stupid idea in their head, I'm not saying you cannot protect yourself. I'm not saying don't defend yourself. Right? If somebody broke in my house, tried to hurt my wife, my stepdaughter, anybody in my family, I would protect them. And I would have to answer to God for whatever. But so I'm not saying don't protect yourself. What I am saying is this. You can't fix hurt by hurting more. There's a saying, hurt people hurt people. In our culture today, in our world today, we think that if someone has hurt us, that gives us good reason to go hurt them back. Jesus doesn't seem to give that example. As a matter of fact, he seems to show us an with honey than vinegar. I was like, what's that all about? She's like, it'd be nice, it attracts people. And yeah, like, yeah, that's what it's all about. Oh, well, that makes sense to me. Well, let's look at another situation that Jesus is in with someone else, because why stop at one Roman? Let's keep going. Okay. Luke chapter 8, we're going to read 14 verses, and then we're going to land this plane. So it says, on his return, Jesus was welcomed by a crowd. By the way, okay, so between Matthew and Luke, Matthew walked with Jesus, Luke got his info from Paul. He went and like interviewed all different people. He was a follower of Paul, but he went and interviewed a whole bunch of different people to like try and get a chronological or most detailed version of the story. Luke was a doctor. So anyhow, all right. On his return, Jesus was welcomed by a crowd. They were all there expecting him. A man came up, Jairus by name. He was the president of the meeting place. He fell at Jesus' feet and begged him to come to his home because his 12-year-old daughter, his only child, was dying. Pause. Leader of the meeting place. We don't know if Jairus was a friendly or an enemy, but here's what we do know. The majority of the religious folk, religious leaders, the Pharisees, the Sadducees, and the scribes, the majority of them were opposed to Jesus because people were making claims he was the Messiah. People were making claims that he was Elijah. People were making claims that he was the new Moses to come. So the religious leaders were like, whoa, 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 whoa. This guy is saying that our teaching is wrong. This guy is saying this. So Jairus, being the president, if you will, of the meeting place, you know, he was a known Jewish leader in the community. So for him to go associate with Jesus would have been bad news bears for him. Would not have been welcomed. So again, here's a guy who, for all intents and purposes, may have very well been someone against Jesus, right? Now, if he was the president of the temple, he was a Jew, so he was part of that community. But the religious leaders were known for taking advantage of the community, right? They were sitting there high, mighty, wealthy, and looking down at the, you know, allowing all of those around them to still be struggling. The religious leaders were trying to, even though they hated the Romans, they were trying to buddy up to him to get favor. So this guy Jairus, I don't know. We don't know for sure. We don't know that he actually was a friend to Jesus. What we know is he wanted something from Jesus. And so he came to him and asked him for it. And it's funny because like, so they were like, oh, well, that person only is coming because they want to get something. Well, yeah. Yep. And it's interesting, Jesus didn't go, hey, you're only coming to me because you want something from me. You guys hate me. I'm not going to help your daughter. Nope. Let's look what happens. Let's look what happens. Okay. So, big Jesus, his 12-year-old daughter's dying, his only child. Jesus went with him, making his way through the pushing, jostling crowd. In the crowd that day, this is two amazing things that are about to happen in this story. In the crowd that day, there was a woman who for 12 years had been afflicted with hemorrhages. She had spent every penny she had on doctors, but not one of them had been able to help her. She slipped in from behind and touched the edge of his robe, and that very moment, her hemorrhaging stopped. Now, I want to share something with you guys you may not know. In Tanakh, Old Testament, there's something that talks about when Messiah comes, there will be healing in his tzitzi. In his wings. The tzitzi were also what were referred to as the tassels on a robe. And so this woman, by coming up and touching Jesus, she believed there was healing in his tzitzit. What she was really believing was this guy is who everybody says he is, right? So for her to think, if I could just touch him, I'll get healing, that's amazing. Because she's like, he's the guy. He's the guy. But here's a crazy thing. Jesus stopped. He says, who touched me? When no one stepped forward, Peter said, Master, we got crowds of people in our hands. Dozens have touched you. Jesus insisted, someone touched me. I felt power discharging from me. When the woman realized she couldn't remain hidden, she knelt trembling before him. In front of all the people, she blurted out her story, why she touched him, and how at the same moment she was healed. Now, some might say, why was she trembling? Why was she scared? Why would she have been so nervous? Well, there's a couple of reasons. One, she was a woman, and women were thought of as property. It's disgusting. It's messed up. Jesus tried to break barriers there, too. But the other reason is because she had this bleeding disease, this hemorrhaging, which many believe... by the way, it's worded, if you were to read the original text, is that it was like an uncontrollable menstruation, right? So it's coming from that area, too. She was believed to be unclean. And so for her to touch you would make you unclean. And so for her to just walk up and, you know, touch it, like, hey, I'm going to get healing here. She was risking her life, basically, because she could have been, like, taken before the courts and like, hey, you know, you're unclean. Why are you just out there in the streets around people and touching people and spreading your uncleanness and your disease all over? Like, people with infirmities were like, ugh, treated horribly, right? It's sad and sickening, but it's true. So that's why she was trembling. It wasn't because she, like, Jesus was some meanie, but it was like because she knew based on the laws that were imposed back then to just go touch somebody when you're considered ceremonially unclean. Was a no-no. So, it says, she knelt trembling before him. In front of all the people, she blurted out her story, why she touched him, and how, at that same moment, she was healed. Jesus said, daughter, you took a risk trusting me, and now you're healed and whole. Live well, live blessed. I love it. Jesus recognizes to her, you took a risk trusting me. And can I share with you, friends, these words right here, you took a risk trusting me, those still apply today. When we choose to trust Jesus, we're taking a risk. When we're choosing to live the way of life that he says this is the way to live, we are taking a risk because the world we know isn't going to like that. You're going to get rejected by people. There are going to be some things you say that are unpopular. Like when you say, love your enemies, even if they treat you like crap, be kind as best you can. As Paul says, if at all within your power, make peace, right? That's not a popular thing to say, especially right now when side number one says, these guys are horrible, let's rise up. And side number two says, these guys are horrible, let's rise up. Everybody's on a side trying to fight each other instead of realizing We're all human beings. We're all really on one side, and we're supposed to be on the side of God. Jesus says to this woman, in front of everyone, you took a risk trusting me. Now, that's a weird statement coming from the Messiah, right? Like, and you got to imagine, some people are watching going, if this guy's the Messiah, there's no risk in trusting him. But she did take a risk. She put her trust in him, believing that he is who she thought he was supposed to be. And look at the result of her risk. Jesus says, now you're healed and whole. Live well, live blessed. See, her taking a risk to trust Jesus, trusting him to be who he said he was, led to a whole and healed life. And that goes beyond just physical healing. Now, she's not thought of as unclean anymore. Now, she's got self-respect again. Now, she can experience the joys of the entire world and not have to be away from people. Now, she can live in community again. Jesus didn't just restore her physically. He restored her emotionally, mentally, and spiritually in that moment. And she was a stranger to him. So first, we see an example of a very blatant enemy being loved by Jesus. We see an example of someone far off, a servant that he didn't know, could have been Jew, Gentile, we don't know, being loved by Jesus through healing, right? The enemy got praise in front of all of Jesus' people, got love. Now we see a stranger woman who, she wasn't offering anything. She didn't come before him and say, Lord, I recognize who you are. She didn't profess with her mouth. She came wanting healing and believed that if their Hebrew Bible, Tanakh, Old Testament, was true, that the Messiah would have healing in his wings and his tassels. And so she thought, well, you know what? I'm going to take a risk and I'm going to touch it. I'm going to touch his tassel, his tzitzit. If I touch the tzitzit and I'm healed, then he is who he says he is. That's a big risk. So here's someone we could say perhaps skeptical, cautiously optimistic. Maybe she was full on believing. Either way, she took a risk. She touched his tassel. She was healed. Okay? So we see an enemy. We see a stranger. We see someone who one could argue was just selfishly looking for something to get out of Jesus, this woman. She just wanted healing. So we see a stranger, we see an enemy, we see someone who might have been self-serving, and Jesus gives love to all of them. Look at how he responds to her. You took a risk trusting me. You're healed and whole. Go live a blessed life. Wow. Now, while he was still talking, oh wait, don't forget about Jairus, the guy with the dying daughter, the leader of the temple there, of the meeting place. While he was still talking, someone from the leader's house came up and told him, your daughter died. No need to bother the teacher. Wait, ouch. I mean, this guy just came to Jesus for help, and now his kid's dead. Jesus overheard and said, don't be upset. Trust me, and everything will be all right. Ooh, come on, look at these words right here if you're watching this with me. Just trust me, and everything will be all right. In that moment, Jairus had a choice. You know, trust what Jesus says and walk the way he tells me to walk, meaning like go to his house with it, go back to Jairus' house. Or he could have said, you're not who you say you are because you didn't do what I wanted when I wanted it done. Come on. How many times in life do we do that? God, if you're real, you do this for me right now, and then I'll take the risk to trust you. Nope. What does Jesus say? Don't be upset. Just trust me, and everything will be all right. Now, if you were to stop the story there, we would not know. Like if Luke had stopped writing right there, we would not know the rest of the story. And we could go, well, what happened? Did the girl get healed? Was he talking about just trust me or go to heaven and see her again? No, thankfully, we've got the rest of the story. As Paul Harvey says, the rest of the story. Okay, well, what is the rest of the story? Going into the house, oh, well, just trust me. And Jairus went, okay, then come on, let's go to my house. They went, and he said, he, being Jesus, wouldn't let anyone enter with him except Peter, John, James, and the child's parents. Everyone was crying and carrying on over her. And in other manuscripts, we read about, there are professional mourners. People literally, if someone was dying, if someone died, you would pay people to come and literally mourn, right? Like a group of people that just wail and cry and just show how much loss there was. Which means the people back at Jairus' home, maybe they knew he was going to get Jesus, maybe they didn't. Oh, well, they did know because the person came up and said, hey, your kid's dead, no need to bother the master. So the people back home didn't have faith that Jesus could even save this girl because they had already taken the time to go out and hire mourners to come and mourn because they expected the girl to die. That in and of itself is a whole different episode. But anyways, everyone was crying and carrying on over her. And Jesus said, don't cry. She didn't die. She's sleeping. Look how these people responded to what Jesus said. They laughed at him. Why? Because they knew she was dead. Then Jesus, gripping her hand, called, my dear child, get up. She was up in an instant and breathing again. He told them to give her something to eat. Her parents were ecstatic. But Jesus warned them to keep quiet. Don't tell a soul what happened in this room. Let's break this down, and then we'll wrap it up. We saw Jesus show love to an enemy. We saw Jesus show love to someone who just wanted something for themselves and touched his tassel. We see Jesus show love to a family whose daughter was ill and show love to the ill child. What's the point of this? Well, here's the point. The world has a lot of sucky stuff going on. There's a lot of violence, a lot of anger, a lot of disagreement, a lot of silliness, a lot of stupidity. There's a lot of it. Let's just own it. There's a lot of it. It's not fun. It's not cool. There are a lot of things that it makes sense for us to be frustrated with. Here's the deal. Like Jairus, father of the girl, we have a choice. When bad news comes our way, we have a choice to stop walking with Jesus in the direction we know we're supposed to be going. We have a choice to stop doing that and behave like we feel or like the rest of the world tells us we should. That's a choice we can make. Or we can take those words that Jesus said to Jairus. Trust me, and everything will be okay. Well, what does it mean to trust it? Well, he said to do what? Love God and love others. Here's the thing. There are people that we disagree. We disagree with stuff medically. We disagree with stuff politically. I have family members that I disagree with on that stuff. Guess what? None of those disagreements are bigger than my love for them. And I hope none of those disagreements are bigger than their love for me too. And here's the thing. Can you imagine this world right now? If all of us were, in spite of my disagreements with you, in spite of my anger because you don't see things the way I do, I'm going to be kind to you. Imagine how much better our world would be. Imagine how much better our world would be if when somebody saw differently than you and I, if we didn't see eye to eye, we made the conscious choice to go, I'm still going to love you. I'm still going to be kind to you. I'm still going to show you grace. I'm still going to show you mercy. Now, are we going to do it right all the time? Nope. That's why I'm going to say it again and again. Don't follow me. I'm trying to do it right. I will screw up every now and again. It's going to happen because guess what? I'm not Jesus. And neither are you. So you're not going to get it all right all the time either. Nobody will. Our pastors don't get it right all the time, friends. If our pastors don't get it right all the time, and they're supposed to be the ones who have spent years in Bible college and getting to know God, those of us who got an ordination, we do things wrong, we live wrong, we make mistakes. If we didn't, if we were perfect, there would have been no need for Jesus to go to the cross. But he did because we're not perfect. But in spite of humanity's brokenness and imperfection, we are created in the image of God. What does that mean? Well, this broken group of people who were God's enemies, God showed us love. Now there are still broken people all over this world that are your enemies. There's a reason that Jesus said, love your enemies. He didn't say, everyone is your friend. He recognized the fact that there are people who are opposed to you. And in your heart of hearts, you might feel opposed to them. When Jesus said to love your enemies, he wasn't talking about a feeling. And that's the challenge we have today, is we think, well, if I'm a Christian, then when my heart changes, I have this feeling of joy toward everyone. I'm going to always feel like I'm happy with this person. Do you honestly think Jesus was happy as he felt the cat of nine tails whip dig into his flesh and rip pieces away? Do you think he found joy in spikes going through his hands and feet? Let me remind you, before that horrible day that brought redemption for you and I, Jesus prayed and said, Dad, if there's any other way to do this, I don't want to do it. Whew. No. See, loving our enemies is hard. But you know why I know we can do it? Because Jesus did it. He said we could do it. He told his disciples to make disciples. When a rabbi says to follow him, they say it because they believe you can do what they do. You know, part of me thinks when Jesus said, you know, hey, you're going to do even greater things than me, he wasn't talking about miracles. And I love that my spirit-filled friends love to think that Jesus is always referring to the faith healings and things like that. Maybe he was. But I can't help but think in my heart of hearts that what Jesus was saying is, look, Because he showed us examples of everything, right? Showed us examples of faith bringing healing, bringing restoration. But you know what he showed us a great example of? Forgiveness. On the cross, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. Man, those are powerful words. What if we were to think that way right now about those who disagree with us? I'm a pretty conservative cat in most respects, right? And I get very frustrated with politics, with mainstream media, with the fact that people just can't have a conversation online without getting blocked, banned, or censored. I get frustrated with that. And I'm trying, not perfectly, I'm trying to like be willing to share things to go, hey, well, here's what 90% of the stuff says, here's the 10% that I read that I think everybody should at least be able to read as well and then make an informed decision. But in my heart, I'm also trying to say, if I think somebody is just genuinely trying to do us dirty, I'm just trying to struggle. Yeah, I said trying to struggle because I'm trying to struggle and get it in myself to struggle with. If I think somebody is doing something dirty, going, God, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. Now, somebody might say, yeah, they know what they're doing, bro. They know they're misleading the entire world. I don't think that's what Jesus meant by that. They don't know what they're doing. As best I can tell, it seems like he's saying they don't realize the consequence of what they're doing. They think, because when we start doing things for selfish reasons, because it'll get me more popularity, because it'll make me more money, right? As a business person, so I think it'll make me more money. So there's been this one thing, this one little white lie, or skirt this one little rule. When we do that, it has consequences in here. It has consequences in our soul, in our conscience, in our heart. Every time we cause a little bit of hurt, it builds a callus. See, there's a reason that we feel a certain way inside when we do something that's not cool. It's because we weren't wired to behave that way. We were created in God's image. So every time we do something that doesn't align with God's image, we know. We can feel that. But every time we do it and we don't stop to recognize that small, still voice that's going, you knew better than that, it creates a hardened heart. And then it makes it a little easier to do it again and again. And I think when Jesus said, forgive them, they don't know what they're doing. I think he was saying, forgive them. They don't know the damage that's being done to them right now. They don't know what they're doing to themselves and how that affects their relationship with you, God. And see, if we don't have a good relationship with God, it's going to be impossible to love each other, right? The scriptures also say, as we looked at yesterday, if we're not loving people, we're also not loving God. And that brings me back to today's episode. How do we deal with our enemies? How do we deal with a government that we feel is misleading us? And listen, for those of you that go, no, this government's good now, okay, think about the one right before it that you hated, the one that you felt was misleading you, okay? Let's be real and own it that way, okay? What if we just start going, oh, yeah, they're our enemies. They're my enemy. They're against me. But I'm going to pray for them anyway. Scripture says, love your enemies, pray for them. If you think somebody is your enemy, whether it's the government, whether it's your school teacher, whether it's your parent, whether it's an abusive spouse, by the way, if it's someone hurting you and abusing you, get out of there. I'm just going to say that now. Get out of there. And if you got a pastor telling you anything different, they need to have their head checked. Jesus didn't say, stay there. Whole other episode. If you got somebody who you feel is oppressing you, causing you pain, hurting you, you have two choices. You can hurt them back. You can hurt them back. Or you can choose to pray for them, which is a way of loving them. Look, we're not all going to agree on political stuff. We're not. And it's all stupid. It should be very easy. God gave us freedom to do right and wrong. Trust people to do right or wrong. People that do wrong, consequences happen. But if every one of us just tried to love one another, the world would be a better place. That's pretty simple. How would Jesus want you to handle your enemies? The same way he handled his. on the cross after they beat the crap out of him, right? Hung him up there. He said, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing yet. When a Roman centurion, soldier that oppressed his people, came and said, hey, I need your help. He said, okay, I'll help. When a stranger who was considered unclean, diseased, who knows what the disease was, the bleeding disease, like they didn't know, they didn't have the technology we do, and for all they knew, it was contagious. When she touched him, Jesus didn't say, how dare you touch me, that's gross, what if you're contagious? What? He said, hey, you take a risk and trust in me. You know you're healed and whole now. So how did Jesus treat people who had a medical condition that people didn't understand and that were just doing their best to manage it the way they thought was best for themselves? He loved her. He didn't condemn her for violating everything that was set up in the system for everyone's safety. How did Jesus treat the leader of a local synagogue, Jairus, who we don't know if he was for Jesus or against him, but we know that Jairus's people back home didn't believe that Jesus was going to be able to heal her because they already had professional mourners hired there, wailing and crying by the time they arrived. And how did Jesus handle it? He didn't get there and go, oh, what, you had a backup plan in case I wasn't really able to heal her? You brought in all the mourners? Nope. He said, she's just sleeping. And they laughed at him. And he said, come on. Peter, James, John, mom and dad, let's go get your daughter up. She's taking a nap. And he healed her and brought her back to life. Friends, strangers, enemies, different political views, different health views, breaking the law, keeping the law, making the law, all of them. Jesus showed love. Man, what if we did the same? How much better would the world be? Wrestle with that. I'll see you guys tomorrow morning. Love y'all.